A couple episodes ago, we had the FINRA Foundation's Jerry Walsh and Gary Mottola with us to debunk 7 myths about millennial investors. Today, we're welcoming them back to the show to turn some of those myths into actionable information. If you haven't yet started investing because you have too much debt, lack confidence, or don't even know where to begin, stay tuned. Jerry and Gary have some great tips for you. Welcome to FINRA Unscripted from Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Caitlin Kiernan. Today, we are welcoming back to the show the FINRA Foundation's Jerry Walsh and Gary Mottola. You may remember them from episode 19 when they joined us to tell us about their new study with the CFA Institute looking at the paths that millennials follow into investing. Today, they are joining us again because we had too much information to fit into one episode, and we're going to talk about what would-be or young investors can take away from that study to ensure a stronger financial future. Jerry and Gary, welcome back.
Thanks for having us again.
Hey, nice to be here.
Today, I just wanted to start with this. What is the most important thing for anyone to know before they start investing?
You have to know what your financial balance sheet looks like. That sounds really boring. And I'm sorry, but you have to know what money's coming in and what money's going out. And where does the money that's coming in come from? And where does the money that's going out go to? Because that's the only way that you can figure out how big a line item you can put to savings and investing. And if you've got a lot of debt, a lot of people do, especially younger people who have recently finished college or graduate school, but any kind of debt, student debt, mortgage, credit card debt, if you've got a lot of debt, you have to figure that out and think about how you allocate your saving, investing, and paying down debt.
Gary, anything to add?
Going a little beyond that point, you need to have a goal. The goal that you set is going to determine, in many instances, your portfolio allocation.
And I'm just going to change my answer to say absolutely what Gary just said, because when I speak to investors, that's what I say is start with your goals and remember that your goals are different. Your neighbor might have different goals, your cousin, whoever it is that you talk to about money. But it always comes down to your goals.
And once you have your goals, you can move on to making sure you understand your balance sheet to figure out how to make your goals happen.
Exactly. And I like to call it a spending plan instead of a balance sheet or a budget, because in truth, that's kind of what it is. What are you going to spend your money on? Everybody should put a little bit of fun into their budget. It's not all sad and boring like I made it sound like in the first minutes.
Well, spending is definitely a better way to frame it. Here's what you could spend on as opposed to you need to budget.
That's right.
I like that approach. Once you have your goals and you know what your spending plan looks like, how do you get started?
That's always the question that we hear from people. And the most important thing that you can do is think about within your goals, how do you want to do it? Are you the kind of person that wants someone to do the work for you? They tell you what they recommend, you say go, and that's how it works. Or are you the kind of person who wants to manage your money yourself? And even within that latter category, there are a couple of different types of people, right? There are the people that don't have a lot, they're just putting in a little bit of money every month. They really don't need a lot of bells and whistles with the kind of service that they're getting from their firm. But then there are also the people who are active, who are researching, who are reading and trying to get information on investing. So there's a wide range of investors. You need to know which one you are. Because if you're that one that wants advice, you need to go to a full service firm. The bottom line, though, is whatever firm you go to, make sure that it's registered with FINRA.
And how can you do that?
You can check them on BrokerCheck, FINRA.org/BrokerCheck. You can go check out the firm, make sure that it's registered. You can also check out any investment professional that you are going to be working with, whether they're a registered investment advisor or a registered representative of a broker-dealer. You can find out whether they're licensed and whether they have a history of problems with customers. One of the things about being a registered representative is that there are all kinds of books and records obligations. There's suitability obligations, which is basically sort of a standard of care that means you need to know your customer and what their goals are and what their assets and income, all those kinds of things. There's an analogy to driving, right? I assume, I'm not going to call anyone out, I assume that everyone here in this room has a driver's license, right? That allows us to go drive on the highway. Now, there are people that drive without a license, right? And that can be a problem if they get into an accident, they don't have insurance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. With investing, if you're dealing with somebody who isn't registered, who doesn't have a license to sell securities or to give advice, you can get into a lot of trouble.
Now, I wanted to go back to something that you mentioned on the last episode we did together, Jerry. You mentioned that employer-sponsored plans, this is something like a 401k, are a huge benefit when it comes to getting millennials started on the road to investing. If you don't have something like that, are you doomed, or do you have options to get started?
You are absolutely not doomed. If you are earning income, you are able to set up an IRA. They're basically a way to set aside money for retirement in a tax-advantaged way. And particularly for younger investors who are making under the thresholds so that they qualify for a Roth IRA. A Roth IRA can be a really great way to go. It's a great way to start saving money. The downside, to the extent that there's any downside, but one of the factors that you have to consider is that there are limitations to how much you can contribute to an IRA. It's $6,500 a year.
$5,500.
It's $5,500 a year. And if you happen to be over 50, it's $6,500.
Which, if you're a millennial, you are not yet over 50.
You are so not over 50. Your parents might be over 50, but that's probably it. But there are other mechanisms too, though. So if you don't have a 401k at work, you are interested in contributing more. There are things called simples, which are these sort of self-employed plans that you can set up, a SEP, a self-employed retirement plan. There are other mechanisms. We have a ton of information on our website.
And we'll link to that. The report also found, and Gary, you were mentioning this, that a lack of confidence is also a huge barrier to entry. What can young investors or potential investors do to build that confidence?
You had a couple things. You had mentioned that if you have access to an employer-sponsored retirement plan, that's a ramp to investing. And part of that is because automatic enrollment. You join a company, you automatically get moved into the plan. But the other part is also that these companies offer a lot of financial education that's associated with the employer-provided plan. That education is really important. If you are going the IRA route, just make sure you find a way to educate yourself and get that education. And I think there is the segue to confidence. Probably the first step to being confident is having knowledge about investing. So whether you get that knowledge through your employer-sponsored retirement plan or whether you get it through a host of websites that are available, obviously FINRAFoundation.org is one of them, FINRA.org is another one, knowledge is the first step towards confidence.
I have to agree. And there's also a path to investing where you're watching the markets. We have the Market Data Center. You can explore that to see like what the different indexes are that you hear about on the news, but understand how they're operating. If you're an investor getting started, one good way to think about exposing yourself to the markets is to take a look at mutual funds. And we have a lot of information on our website about mutual funds as well.
Yeah, and you know, another thing that came up in the study is that some millennials got interested in investing and learned about investing through games. One game that we know is great, high quality, and has been shown to improve math skills and such is the stock market game. So you could actually get experience investing, build your confidence without risking any money or paying any expenses.
Are there any other resources that you would recommend our listeners check out if they're just looking to learn the basics?
Investor.gov has some good resources, as well as finra.org/investor. Both of those sites are created by regulators, by millennials, Gen Xers, and boomers on the team. So they're written for a variety of points in life, points in age, lots of information on everything from setting a spending plan to the more complex elements of different kinds of investment products.
I can vouch for that. I've written for our websites based on my own experience. I wrote a piece on how to roll over a 401k because when I joined FINRA, I struggled. It was the hardest experience for me, so I wanted to share my knowledge. Jerry, you started by talking about debt. And the study found that debt can be a significant barrier to entry for young Americans, which makes sense if you feel like you have no money to spend because of you're plowing it all to your debt. It's hard to get started. But at what point do you need to try to balance paying that debt and saving for the future, whether that's an emergency fund or investing?
Well, none of us really should be sole focused, right? We all have to multitask in life. And so if you are struggling with student debt, and I've got to say, I struggled with student debt when I graduated. Now, it was decades ago, but I maxed out on my loans. And so I get it. I get it when millennials are talking about that crushing debt because I was like them. And what I did and what we all recommend that people do is sort of take a look at your options. If you have particularly high interest debt, whether it's student debt or a credit card, pay down the highest interest charge, so whatever that debt is, because the fact that you're paying more in interest means that you're losing more. But as you look at what you can afford to do, maybe you were automatically enrolled into your retirement savings plan. Do you need to make an adjustment to the amount that you've been enrolled at? A lot of companies will enroll people at 3%. Can you afford to contribute more so that you maximize the company's match? Do you need to contribute a little bit less because you need to be paying money down on your debt? One of the most important things is have an emergency fund. You mentioned it, Caitlin, and it is critical because one of the things that we see is year in, year out, Americans tend to be pretty financially fragile. They can't come up with $2,000 in a 30-day period. They can't come up with $400 in a day. And that means that if any financial shock happens to them, their car breaks down, you know, kid needs braces, a tree limb comes through the roof, all of a sudden, your life can be upended. You might lose your job. Just all kinds of bad things can happen for not having precautionary savings. So figuring out how you can make sure that you've got an emergency fund, that you're paying at least the minimum, but preferably more on your debt, and then setting aside something for the future, especially if with a retirement savings plan, it's free money through a company match.
Compared to prior generations, millennials who do invest more often start when they're young, before the age of 21, according to the study. Many millennials may already be parents or planning to start a family soon. So what can they take away from that? When should you start talking about money and investing with your children?
It's really never too young to start with your kids. You know, if you take them with you to the grocery store or to the sporting goods store, you can talk about how much the things that you're buying cost. And you can talk about different decisions. Maybe it's a different brand of cereal. Maybe it's something that's on sale. You can always train your children by virtue of what you model. Now, if you're modeling bad behavior, if you're a shopaholic who engages in retail therapy, or if you are somebody who goes on binge spending and your kids see that, they see you maxing out your credit cards, that's also behavior that they're learning. So part of what everyone can do with this data from the study is to think about what kind of behavior they're modeling. It's great to hear that millennials were more likely to be talking to their parents about money and that those who got started in investing, in fact, there seems to be this correlation. It's not causal. We don't know whether it's causal, but there's definitely a correlation. And so if we can keep that dialogue going, that's going to be key.
And it seems that one of the challenges is that so much of our financial lives these days are digital. It's the swipe of a credit card. It's not the handing over of cash. So how do you reconcile that?
I think being aware, because it used to be that you could open up your wallet and you could see what you had in your wallet. And you'd go to the ATM to get cash and you could see what your balance was. Now there's more of an effort to some extent, although many of us have apps on our phones where within a tap or two, we can get our balance. But you have to have that knowledge of what you're spending. If you've set up automated payments for your bills, for example, you need to be aware. And that's why I go back to that household balance sheet, because it really does matter what's going in, what's coming out. We have to do more of it in our heads or rely on technology to do it for us, but then we have to check that. If you're using an Excel spreadsheet, you need to go check it. You need to reconcile it. If you're using one of the online tools that help people with budgeting, you need to check that.
The study found that many would-be millennial investors would prefer to be working with a financial professional, but they're unsure of how much it costs or where to find one. How can you get started, and what do you need to know about beginning that kind of relationship?
One of the best ways to get started is to talk with people that you know are investing and not act on the first piece of advice you get. So if your parents have some kind of financial professional, whether it's a planner or an advisor or a broker or some combination, talk to them about who they use, why they use them, what kind of people that professional works with, what they're charging. And at some point, you can steer the conversation toward the professional and ask them, do you work with people like me? What do you charge? What kinds of products can you recommend for me? What not? If you are starting out, you probably don't need and you probably don't want a complex financial portfolio, but you do want to talk about what products you can buy or sell through that professional. And then always check them out. That's one of the things. So ask lots of people for information, but then meet with the professional, whether it's through Skype or in person or over the phone, and talk to them. Listen to your gut. You know, you will get a reaction based on how the person positions themselves. And if you like that person, make sure that you check them out on BrokerCheck. Make sure that they're registered and find out how long they've been in the business and whether they have a history of problems with regulators or customer complaints.
Millennials that we spoke with said family and friends are a big reference point for advisors. But to your point, you absolutely have to check them out.
Before we wrap up, if our listeners today walked away remembering just one thing from this podcast, Gary, what would you hope it would be?
Don't let lack of information or a lack of investment knowledge or a lack of confidence get in the way or be a barrier to start investing. There are resources out there to increase your knowledge, increase your confidence. Reach out to some friends, talk to some family, check things out, but don't let that be a barrier to starting investing.
I agree completely. And what I would add to that is start small. It's okay to start small, but start. Make sure that you're jumping in. Make sure that you're getting involved, because the beautiful thing about being in your 20s or your 30s is that you have decades to see the power of compound interest work in your favor. It can work in your detriment if it's involving debt, but compound interest is truly one of those amazing feats, and getting started early can lead to a lifelong benefit.
Yes, time can literally be money when you start investing early. Well, that's it for today's episode. Jerry and Gary, thank you again for joining us to go through this research and turn it into actionable information for some young, hopefully soon-to-be investors out there. From Washington, D.C., I'm your host, Caitlin Kiernan. If you have any questions for future guests or ideas for future episodes, you can email us at finraunscripted.org or reach out to us on social media. Until next time.
Please note, FINRA podcasts are the sole property of FINRA, and the information provided is for informational and educational purposes only. The content of the podcast does not constitute any FINRA rule or amendment or interpretation to such rules. Compliance with any recommended conduct presented does not mean that a firm or person has complied with the full extent of their obligations under FINRA rules, the rules of any other SRO, or securities laws. This podcast is provided as is. FINRA and its affiliates are not responsible for any human or mechanical errors or omissions. Parties may not reproduce these podcasts in any form or reference them in any publication without the express written consent of FINRA.